Hey everybody, before we kick off the very first episode of B-Movie Mania, we want to send out a special thank you to Mr. Lloyd Kaufman, president and founder of Troma Entertainment, who was kind enough to provide the opening narration for this podcast and the closing narration as well. Thank you, Uncle Lloydie. We'll send you some bourbon.
Nobody puts unnamed nomad stranger in a corner. We watch Steel Dawn, and it's time for the apocalypse on
B-Movie Mania!
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania! And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and crazy Chris Hudson.
Welcome to B-Movie Mania, a podcast where we take turns picking B-movies and we review them and dissect them and pick them apart and all kinds of fun stuff. I'm Jason Halls, and I'm joined by the rest of the B-Movie Mania crew. We have Paul Brooks.
Good evening.
Mike Hayes.
Hello.
And Chris Hudson.
Hello there.
And this is our inaugural episode. It's episode one.
I am excited.
Me too.
I've been looking forward to this all week.
Mike, are you excited?
For the most part.
We'll take it. So the way this got started is we've been doing a thing called the B-Movie Marathon, the 24-hour B-Movie Marathon for 4 years now, and we wanted to get together and enjoy these kind of movies more frequently than once a year. And quite frankly, that event is kind of like a meat grinder, so I don't even remember all the movies that we've watched.
Have we really been doing that for 4 years?
Yeah, yeah, this is coming up on five now.
I didn't even realize that I'd known you guys for 4 years.
So you guys graciously allowed me to pick the first movie, and we watched Steel Dawn.
Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, and can I just get one thing out of the way right now?
Please.
Up front. My wife actually watched the movie with me, and the first thing she said when she saw the credits was, oh, P-Sway. So can we just call Patrick Swayze P-Sway for the rest of the podcast?
P-Sway. I like it.
You're going to have to sell me on it. I don't know. I like Patty S.
Go Patty S if you want. I'm going P-Sway.
Yeah, I think P-Sway is the way to go. And in fact, this is my favorite of the two P-Sway movies that came out in 1987.
What was the other one?
Dirty Dancing.
Oh, duh.
Oh, really? Wait. Those were the same year?
Same year. Actually, only like a few months apart.
Did they film this way ahead of time or something? And then that, like, it finally got released or something?
I think they were filmed at the same time, back-to-back, on the same set.
No, actually, what happened was that they have the same distribution company. It's Vestron Pictures. And Dirty Dancing was actually a low-budget movie, just like this one, that was only supposed to be in theaters for one weekend and then released to video, and it just happened to catch on and become a mega hit. So Dirty Dancing was supposed to have the same path as Steel Dawn did.
Wow, Jay, you did your homework.
I sure did.
Steel Dawn was probably supposed to be the vehicle they wanted, that they assumed would be the popular, epic, post-apocalypse tale, but instead, Dirty Dancing was the hit.
It certainly had the better characterization and acting.
It seems kind of like this company would just do a quick movie, put it out on video. Do a quick movie, put it out on video. So who's to say, okay, really? But I mean, it certainly does. This is certainly, hands down, more ambitious.
Yeah.
So just for anyone out there who hasn't seen the movie, you know, we hope you have, because we're going to kind of talk about it as if you've seen it.
So be aware of spoilers.
Yes, this is major full of spoilers. But the movie is available to rent or purchase on Amazon or YouTube.
Yeah.
If you know where to look for it.
And I have to say, the version on YouTube really gave the authentic VHS viewing experience.
We'll post a link down below to the YouTube link if you are listening to the podcast right now and you know want to watch the film, maybe even before you listen to the podcast. We'll make it nice and easy and give you the option to do that.
Well, why don't we just wait right here, pick this up in a week or two?
Good seeing you guys.
I think, guys, actually it would also be good to point out, since this is our first episode, that we've kind of made a group decision that most of the episodes we're going to be doing for the show are going to be stuff that you as the listener are going to be able to watch really prior to listening to the show. We want to make it easily accessible to our audience.
Regarding Steel Dawn, as just generally, why don't we go around and just say first impressions?
Quick takes!
I'd say that I absolutely enjoyed it. I'm not going to have much to say, bad to say about this movie.
I'm not either. I thought it was, honestly, pretty well put together.
It's pretty tight.
I only think it's tight because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the movie, and it's the second time I've seen it, and it's great. But I think it only feels tight because the movie is so vague. There's no world building. The characters are just like, it's like, what, a week in this guy's life? You just kind of take it on faith that Patrick Peaceway is this badass soldier guy out here to defend this water farm from
the bandits.
Wait, did you watch Star Wars instead? There was no water farms on this.
Okay, so Paul, what did you think?
Well, I watched it just last night at about 10 o'clock for the very first time ever, so it is fresh in my mind. I also enjoyed it. I wouldn't say that I was like totally crazy about it. I think I have a couple bones to pick with it here and there that we can kind of get into. But I also don't want to nitpick or anything. I had fun watching it. I was engaged most of the time. And you know, it's one of those fun 80s movies.
Okay. And, you know, Chris sort of mentioned roughly the nutshell of the plot. So basically, it's about your apocalyptic lone warrior. You know, the villains want to control the whole water supply in the valley, and he goes up against them and has to fight them.
I mean, let's be honest. It comes across sometimes as a little bit of a Mad Max cash-in.
Well, that's absolutely what it was.
That's one of the criticisms. I don't really care, though.
Yeah. I mean, other than the cheap swords, I thought everything worked.
Mm-hmm. You know, oddly enough, I kind of got a little bit of a feeling watching some of it that they kind of maybe did some Star Wars stuff on purpose, too, because the little kid kind of looked like a young Luke Skywalker.
Oh, well, I thought he looked like Anakin Skywalker, like the whatever his name is.
Little Jake Lloyd.
I was waiting for a steel pod racer to show up at some point.
There was one.
There were little wind racer things.
He was building a wind racer, just like Anakin was building a pod racer.
Oh my god, you're right.
As an aside, I have a question about that. Were those things wind-powered or like hand-crank-powered? I mean, those things hit a top speed of like 6 miles an hour, so either one of those is plausible.
The science behind it sounded a little bit weird, but apparently George Lucas sat down in like 1988 and was like, oh, what do we have here?
Those things went just fast enough for the guy who plays the mummy to be impaled.
The movie's called Steel Dawn. Can we talk about why it's called Steel Dawn?
Yes. In fact, that's probably one of the things that I would criticize most about the movie is the title.
Vague?
Oh, no. I love it.
Well, I think it's vague. It doesn't have any real relevance. It sounds more like an 80s metal band. Like, it just doesn't fit the movie.
Right.
It's not an 80s metal band. It is a metal band, though.
Is it?
Yeah, there's a metal band called Steel Dawn.
They just sing songs about Peaceway.
I have no idea. I didn't listen to any of it. But there's a band called Steel Dawn.
So this is the research that you did, Mike?
Yeah, I just looked up synonyms and homonyms.
Can that be your research for every episode?
Yeah, I'll just look up bands that have the same name as a musician or as the movies.
Sounds good.
No, but the reason it's called Steel Dawn is because after the apocalypse, everything else has rotted away, and the only thing left is steel. And so everything in this movie is made of steel. Now, some of it doesn't make sense because steel is not lightweight. Everything in this movie was made of freaking aluminum, but that's the point.
That's where you're going with it, though. That's where you think they were going with it.
Well, it has to be. Some guy thought he was clever and was like, you know, wood would be gone by now. So how about some metal? There's some steel everywhere. Yeah, let's just build everything out of steel.
Steel Dawn.
That has to be what he thought. Yeah, I don't know what the Dawn part is, but
see, I think you're thinking a little bit too much about it.
No, I think the writer was.
I just know that, you know, Jay, you mentioned that you thought it was a more ambitious project, and I agree with that, but I also thought that there was some stuff that looked like maybe they didn't have a huge budget for this. Some stuff kind of looked a little bit on the cheap side.
I would actually say that the production design for the movie looked pretty good, honestly. Like, I didn't have a problem that some things looked maybe a little cheap, because everything's sort of hacked together.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of part of the world, you're saying, is that's the look of it.
Yeah. I liked the look of the movie.
Except for that sword.
Yeah. The sword's a little rough. I'll give that to you.
You know what I did like, though? I liked the bathtub that Peaceway sits in when he's threatened by the bad guys.
What's the matter? Never seen a grown man naked?
Best line of the movie.
Can we get the elephant out of the room here, please?
Okay, yeah. I will tell you the reviews of the band Steel Dawn, Paul. I'm sorry. Okay.
What? No, that's not talking about.
On their website,
all.
On Steel Dawn's website, there's a review that says, Steel Dawn kicks ass. If you want one of the best flout-out American rock shows in the house, hook 'em up.
That could also be a review for the movie.
It could be.
No,
right, I'm sorry, Paul. Please,
Chris
continue.
Mentioned that. Well, Chris mentioned the bathtub. Can we say it? I mean, I'm a straight man, but how hot is Peaceway in this thing?
Oh, he's a looker,
especially in that desert sun.
He went out to the tub outside the farm just to show off.
It was not anywhere near the camp or the farm.
I mean, listen, if you're a Peaceway fan and you haven't seen this film, we are talking 1987 prime Peaceway. He is tan. He is cut. He's wet. He is looking good.
So what did you guys think just overall plot?
I thought it was a little cookie cutter.
A little predictable, maybe?
You know what wasn't cookie cutter were those guys at the beginning that crawled out of the sand.
I am so pissed off about those guys.
Like, what kind of genetic mutation allows people to burrow under sand and, like, steal packs from passersby?
I actually really like that.
They were amazing. Why weren't they in the rest of the fucking movie?
Yeah.
And nowhere else were they. I literally texted Jay. I was watching it, and I saw them do that, and I'm like, dude, drink every time people go in and out of sand, thinking in my head, that's going to be a good drinking rule because it's going to happen constantly throughout this movie, and it doesn't happen never again. They just forget that happened.
That's kind of a shame because that was like one of the little pieces of world building that they did do, and I could have used a lot more of just that kind of stuff.
Oh, it would have been great. Can you imagine? Like, I thought when I saw that, I'm like, dude, there's going to be like an underground civilization. There's going to be people underground. We're going to get to see Peaceway digging deep in the dirt, and he's going to be in some, like, mines or some tunnels under the desert, and it'll be sweet. But,
didn't happen. Those guys looked like, what's the guy from Futurama, Zoidberg? It looked like if Zoidberg put on a Tusken Raider outfit. Interesting look.
You know, another little part of the world building that I did enjoy was between Peaceway and Sho, the main villain.
Ugh. Sure, we got to talk about him.
Sho is kind of like the anti-Peaceway. They're from the same order of, you know, warriors, but so there's a respect there, and he got really upset every time anybody tried to interfere with his one-on-one fight.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cool.
That was cool.
That was the whole, like, samurai movie thing that happened. They cookie-cuttered a samurai plot out of this whole thing, too. It was very, especially that last fight was, like, right out of a Zatoichi movie.
And that was a long fight.
That was a great fight.
Oh, it was great. No, it was fantastic.
That was hands down the best part of the movie, if you ask me.
Well, you can't complain about the fighting in this movie, at least. Like, the camera work, the editing was great. I mean, freaking what's-his-face that did Star Trek Beyond can learn a million things from this movie.
Justin Lin.
And Paul, here's a little piece of trivia I think you'll especially appreciate, is that the actor who played Sho, I forget his name.
Tina Turner.
Tina Turner was also played a villain in a unaired 1970s episode of Doctor Who.
And why do you think I would appreciate that? For the viewers who don't know, which is probably all of you, I'm not a Doctor Who fan. Laugh it up. Chris is a huge Doctor Who fan, and we are basically on polar opposite sides of the spectrum. I want to disagree with something that you said, Chris, earlier. With it seems like you weren't really fond of the fact that they didn't do a lot of world building, as you put it. I actually enjoyed the fact that they kind of had some stuff going on where they insinuated that this was sort of a post-apocalyptic, you know, nuclear world, but they didn't beat you over the head with it. I kind of enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah, I didn't mean that as like a bad thing, because I think it worked for the movie, but you know, they were, I mean, they made a couple of comments here and there, and you saw these sand people that never showed up again, but the world building was kept to a pretty, to a very minimum. But I don't think that really hurt the movie. I would have liked to see more, but you know, maybe they'll save that for the sequel.
I think the present day world building was fleshed out a decent bit. I mean, it was obviously just a small town or village or community that they were part of, right? But the history wasn't there, so you didn't know. All you knew about that was that there was a war, and that obviously civilization has been turned into this dust pile of garbage.
And that's kind of all you need to know, really.
Exactly. No, I'm into it. Like, you don't know about anything about the Mad Max stuff, even though the first Mad Max movie takes place when things are green. Like, mm-hmm. You still don't really know what happened. They give you a little intro at the beginning of a nuclear bomb or whatever, but like, you don't really know. You don't need to know. Leave it to the imagination.
I think that says a lot that we like the movie well enough that we want to know more.
The only thing that actually kind of is referenced in the film is when Kasha, who is actually Peaceway's real life wife for like 35 years. Oh yeah. Yeah. They were married. They were married before the movie, and they were married until he died. Wow. Like they had like I think 34 years.
Yeah. They married in like the mid 70s or something.
I had no clue.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were really together.
the passion between them on screen didn't come through, Paul?
No, they had great chemistry. I thought a lot of the acting, even though, you know, things were pretty straightforward, I thought everyone did a really great job with their performances.
Yeah, so the only part where they reference a cause is they just said, do you ever wonder what people were like before the sandstorms came?
Oh, I didn't catch that line.
It's just kind of a throwaway line almost.
Hey, we gotta talk about Tark.
Leon?
Oh, I... God damn it, I love Tark.
Tark was great.
He's one of those great sort of, I don't even want to say sidekicks, because, you know, he had his own thing going on, and there's some stuff in this movie where you really feel for the guy, you really feel for the character.
I felt terrible for him.
Got a bad deal.
Yeah, because he didn't do anything wrong, and you obviously know that he has an interest in Kasha. Like, he's been working for, I'm assuming, years for now for her and protecting her and her family. And, like, just being, like, an upstanding, awesome dude. And then Peaceway, this dick-in-the-sand motherfucker, comes through. And while Swayze doesn't do anything wrong, like, he's not, you know, being a dick or anything. But, like, he just gets looked over, and you just feel real bad for him.
By the way, Jay mentioned it at the very top of the show in the intro, but just to reiterate, his character doesn't have a name in the film.
Okay, so let me go off on this point. This movie is a Western. There's a few reasons why. One, Peaceway is a man with no name. He's just kind of this lonely warrior guy who tries to be honorable in a dishonorable environment. Very, very Western.
If you look at the credits, he's just credited as Nomad.
Yeah, exactly. Another point, he comes into contact with civilization. He purges the it of savage elements, and in the end he either has a choice to assimilate with society, which would be staying at the farm, or heading back out on his own. Classic Western choice. The whole movie has a very frontier feel where they're struggling against nature. The Kasha, strong female character, serves as the voice of reason and the love interest, also a trope you find in a lot of Westerns. And you have the one-on-one battle that we talked about between the hero and the villain.
Wow, yeah. You're right on the money. Lots of good points there.
So, I mean, this is basically a post-apocalyptic Western. A lot of people, I think, kind of knocked it off for being a rehash of the movie Shane, which I've never seen. But I kind of want to see it now, to be honest.
I'm not familiar with Shane, so I have no basis of knowledge for any of that. But just on its own, it certainly, you know, holds up as sort of a standalone apocalyptic Western.
Did I go down a rabbit hole there?
That's fine.
I would dig deeper in that rabbit hole and say that most Westerns are based off of old samurai films. Because they have a lot of this. I mean, it's all that lone warrior type deal.
Yeah, and I really miss the samurai version of Blazing Saddles.
Hey, if I could go back to Tark for a second. The only thing that did bug me about Tark is that, well, Chris said, you know, he kind of got a little bit of a raw deal with what happened to him in the film. But also, like, you know, he starts out as sort of an authority figure. Peaceway shows up and Tark basically says, like, I'm protecting her. You know, this is my turf. Get it straight. You know what I mean? And by the end of the film, as enjoyable as his character is, he's kind of this bumbling drunkard all of a sudden. He takes his character arc is pretty steep.
Yeah.
Although I have to say though, he got a nice reward kind of midway through during the raid scene when they went to get the water pump. He saw the naked women.
You talking about the Porky's scene?
Yeah, the Porky's scene. It's like Tark. That's like the first time he's ever seen bare breasts. It's just like his mouth drops, you know. And Peaceway's like, "Yeah, yeah, let's go. We got a job to do." And then Tark is still there, like mouth open, like "Aw." And Peaceway has to come back and like, "Hey, hey, we got to go."
You know, I mean, the apocalypse. It's rough, you know, and. Sometimes the best you can hope for is to peep a little tit every now and then. That's as good as it's going to get during the apocalypse.
That's true. I was thinking like they break in to steal these parts, these machine parts from the bad guy's camp at night, and there's a party going on, like a rager. And my instant thought was, no, don't go in now. Wait till they're passed out, because they're all gonna fucking pass out at some point, because they're all drinking like insane, like it, this just wait, and then you could sneak in and be as loud as you want. But you know, that would, I guess that would be less interesting.
I also thought it was a little weird, there was another scene, Mike, where Tark is drinking with the other like farmhands and they just get blasted in half, and then Peaceway takes his new lady like off the grid, you know, to hook up with her for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, does anyone want to watch the kid? Because they spent the whole night out there and no one is guarding the place.
Yeah, shit. That kid could have died.
Totally could have. I do have one more point to make about Tark real quick. Not the first time you see him, but when they start to wonder about who Peaceway really is, like Tark and the woman, they're like rifling through Peaceway's stuff. And they find the sword, and Tark's first reaction when they go through all this stuff, they see the sword, he's dangerous. We better kill him. Yeah. Like, what kind of, like, he knew the threat from the beginning.
And by the way, Chris, you keep referring to her as the woman, and I suppose I do too, but we should point out that her name is Kesha, the pop star.
She was literally maybe born when that movie came out.
Hey, speaking of name conversion, though, or confusion, Brian May, the guy who did the score?
Right.
From Queen or not from Queen?
Apparently not from Queen. Did you actually do a little bit of research on that, Chris?
Yeah. This Brian May did not do the score for Highlander or Flash Gordon.
Which I was very disappointed because yeah. I'm a huge Queen fan. Obviously, we know that Queen did an awesome job on the Flash Gordon soundtrack. So when I saw his name pop up in the opening credits, I'm like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. No. This Brian May apparently did the soundtracks to the early Mad Max movies and Dr. Giggles.
Well, that's understandable then why they would tap him for this project if he did the earlier Mad Max films.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Kesha, I noticed at some point, Kesha, K-E dollar sign, I don't know. Anyway, speaking of her, did you guys notice how long her fingernails were in this?
No.
They were long, okay? And it, like grossly long. And it's like 80s long, like kind of pointed a bit, like that whole like style that was cool in the 80s. But like, I don't understand, like, I mean, she must have just been like, no, fuck it, I'm not going to cut these off. Because in the apocalypse, A, they would get super gross and dirty. And B, snapped off like crazy. She's a fucking farmhand.
Good point.
Like, I was, that was probably my biggest problem in the movie.
Interesting. Well, that brings me to another question. Mike, maybe you just answered it for you. I'd just like to hear from everybody. If you could change only one thing about the movie, what would it be? Mike, would it be the fingernails for you, or would you change something else?
No, I would change something else.
What would you change?
What I would change... was, okay, so we mentioned when Tark and the other farmhands get, would you say, Paul, blasted in half?
Indeed.
Okay, so when they get blasted in half, there's a quick maybe 5 or 10 second shot of them singing a drunk song.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, 03, what'll it be? 003 something something buddy. Like, it's 003.
Really?
And so, yeah, yeah. So I wrote it down because I was like fascinated and I really wanted to find a clip of it to play. But it's not very interesting because it doesn't go on very long. I would change that. That would be an entire drunk musical number.
I like it.
Like a 6 minute musical number.
Done by Kesha.
I definitely have something that I want to change, but I'm curious as to what Chris would change.
Oh, I got something. So the villain in this movie, Damnil, was that his name?
Yep. Damnil.
He is the most ineffective villain I've ever seen. Like, when he first shows up at their big like meeting, like his big show of force is to knock over like the town smoker
or something. I was so confused by that too.
The fire pit.
It's like, I'm gonna knock over your fire pit.
It was like a bully in high school, like knocking some kid's like food tray over. And it's just like, well, like that sucks, but like, meh.
I mean, the thing about that, I feel like he had a nice dynamic though with the other main villain.
Sho?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the guy who did the real hard work. I mean, even Damnil, when he showed up in the bathtub scene, just made some vague threats and left Peaceway alone.
So, okay, Chris. If you didn't enjoy him tipping over their camp grill.
No, I did. I loved that.
you did?
I enjoyed that.
Okay.
But
so what would you change?
I would make him a little more effective. Make him his vague threats a little more, give him a little bite.
Okay, I can see that. Because if you think about it, toward the end of the film, Sho even just says, straight up says, I don't think anything about you. Like, I don't care about you at all. So, like, he does seem kind of weak because it was just, Sho is the real, like, badass dude.
Oh, yeah.
In the movie. Like, Damnil's just kind of, somehow he got his power. But, yeah, he's a pretty weak guy, really. Without the Sho and the guy who plays the mummy, he wouldn't have anything.
Yeah, he's a mastermind. He's got the manipulative brain power that he can push on the weak-minded warriors.
Except he can't put that brain power into, like, giving him insight into an effective show of force.
That's true.
Like, he can make threats, but they're really pretty weak.
Well, I would change, plot-wise, I would just like to see a little bit more, honestly, between Peaceway and Sho, because that was my favorite part of the movie, was their interaction. And I think they're only in, like, really, like, three scenes together. So I would have not argued if they wanted to put more of that into the movie. I think that would be cool.
I really don't think their first scene together really counts.
I actually really enjoyed that. I kind of, even as they were having that first showdown, I'm like, okay, they're kind of using these makeshift weapons. They're not really prepared for this. This is kind of a teaser of what is yet to come, you know?
And how cool was that? That Sho was like, oh, you don't have a sword? Let's pull these poles out of a tent. We'll fight that way. Like, he didn't care.
Right.
And speaking of threats, though, when Sho made a threat with that dude who interfered in the fight, he said, next time you do that, I'll cut your head off. He does in the second time they meet. He, like, chops the dude's head right off.
Made good on that promise.
The real first meeting of Peaceway and Sho in the tavern with his friend who Sho killed, right? Was just to bring this up from the beginning of the movie. Did you guys notice that it's just in some sort of steel barn and there's literally a single table in it? There's nothing else in there.
There's no one else there.
And there's no room for anyone else. Well, there's room, but there's no other tables for them. It's a single table and it's just them sitting at it and that's it.
You've got the water bartender and he brings the drinks out and that's all there is.
Which, okay, P.S. That was the bartender in the desert, right? That had died by the snake bite?
Yeah. What was up with that?
The snake bite. The guy didn't even pull. He chopped the snake's head off, but left the head in his leg. He didn't even bother to take the head out.
I don't understand how he ended up out there.
He just went. He was one of the bad guys. He was paid off. He poisoned Peaceway and the mentor.
Probably with some snake venom.
Okay, Paul. So I don't want to leave you out here. What would you change if you could change one thing about the movie?
Well, I tell you what, this might be a little bit controversial, but I was really surprised by the ending, and I kind of wanted to change the ending. Despite what you have said about it being sort of a classic Western ending, which I do understand, but, you know, so basically he does his thing. He helps Kesha. He helps Kesha's son. He gets this, what is essentially going to turn into a new town going. He does a very good thing. And then, like you said, Jay, he does the classic thing where he moves on. I said to myself, hold up. You got a hot lady right there that you're into. You told this kid that you were going to train him how to fight. You got as much water as you could possibly want. You got shelter. Like, it's the apocalypse, dude. Like, stay put, you know? I also understood that, you know, it had a feeling of, like, this could have easily been a franchise. That could have moved it along to another story for part two. And I totally get that. But just from a pure practical perspective, if that was me, I wouldn't be going anywhere. I would be setting up shop right exactly where they were.
That is actually very understandable.
Well, Paul, in defense, though, of him leaving that kid behind, he did...
Jux.
He promised to train him once he learned how to meditate.
Not just meditate, but headstand.
And he never did.
And he never will. Because meditation, can I tell you the... I'm going to read the three rules of it because I wrote them down. First, draw a triangle in the sand. Then,
right,
do a handstand. And then he says, well, no, not the handstand. You put your head on the one corner and your hands on the other two corners. And then he says, raise your toes to the throne, which means do a headstand. That kid was clumsy as shit. God, during the fight, one of the final fights, when the kid is there and he has to run away,
and he hides.
Right? And he tells Tark to take, like, he hides. He literally runs 20 feet and then hides behind a barrel. Of course, someone fucking found him.
When the guys find him, they, like, just lift him up. They're like, it's no big deal.
Yeah, the kid ran behind a barrel and he ran for 3 seconds.
So Mike, you think that the only reason that Peaceway didn't stay was he's like, this kid is just not ready. I'm coming back in like 3 years when this kid has figured out how to do a fucking handstand.
I know we've hinted around about it in the conversation here. We've brought it up just ever so briefly. So let's just take it head on. Steel Dawn 2. Would it be called Steel Sunset or would it be called Steel Dawn 2?
Oh, you sort of doing a Richard Linklater before sunrise, before sunset, before midnight thing?
I'm placing that decision with you.
I don't know. This seems like the kind of franchise that would be called Steel Dawn 2.
I think it would be called Real Dawn, R-E-E-L, Dawn, and he gets paid to start doing movies Three Amigos style.
That doesn't help me at all, Paul.
I think yes, and I think it would be called Steel Late Afternoon. And if I'm being perfectly honest, I felt really bad while I was watching this movie because towards the end, I'm like, you know, I really am kind of digging this movie and I could totally see a sequel. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe they could do one of those things where, like, you know, it's been 30 years and everybody comes back. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, not going to happen.
Well, what about this?
I forgot.
What about this? This leads to my next point, actually. You say 30 years passes. I'm thinking Chris Pine as an adult Jux.
Finally, at the end of the movie, he finally does a headstand.
Yes, he's taken up, you know, he finds Peaceway's sword, whatever, who cares. He's the guy now. What was one thing you'd like to see in the sequel, Paul?
I would like to see the credits, the movie open, and we see Chris Pine as Jux still trying to do a handstand, and he still can't do it.
Sweet, okay. Mike?
God damn it, I don't know. Paul stole my shit.
Sorry.
I would like to see Chris Pine. He's still not made it. He's not learned to fight because he can never do a handstand. So he is a thief, and he's just stealing things from other markets and collecting them and selling them himself every morning. So they just call it Steel Dawn.
Okay.
But just spell it.
Oh, like steel, like S-T-E-A-L.
Yeah, they don't put a 2, they just change the name. And that's what's happening. He's just a thief.
All right, and Chris, what would you like to see in Steel Dawn, however
you know,
we spell it?
You know, Peaceway did a lot of unexplained somersaults in his fight choreography. So I think that, you know, maybe Chris Pine hasn't mastered the headstand, but he can sure do a hell of a somersault in the middle of a fight. So more of that.
Indeed.
To sum that up, Chris Pine is now a thief in the marketplace doing somersaults, but he can't do a headstand.
Yeah.
I'd watch it. I'm totally in.
I have one suggestion for a different guy to play Jux.
Okay.
What if it was Haley Joel Osment?
Heyo.
Oh, you guys remember that dog that didn't matter?
Yeah.
That dog was cool.
The dog killed one guy.
The dog did jack shit.
Let's move into a quick shot round.
Quick shot.
Off the top of your head, just give me your gut reaction to these questions. I have one for each of you. Chris, if Steel Dawn was a baby, would you put this baby in a corner?
Nobody puts Steel Dawn in a corner.
Mike, what kind of drink goes well with Steel Dawn?
Steel Reserve.
Ooh.
That's a good one. Paul, is this the kind of B-movie you can take home to mom? Would you watch this movie, say, on Paul's parents' couch, for example?
I see what you did there. I see what you did there. Little inside joke there. Way to go. Nobody knows what we're talking about.
Would you take it home to mom?
I gotta say no. I'm guessing mom would say there's too much blood, there's too much death. So I gotta go no. Too much violence. Moms don't like violence.
Was there any blood?
Jay.
Yeah.
If you could get a scar tattoo situation on your chest just like Peaceway, what would it be?
I would have Peaceway. I would just have a big scar in the shape of his character. Let's talk about ratings for a second, guys. It's IMDb didn't do so hot. It's generally at about a 5 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah, like a roughly a 34% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
And that's just user voting. And the IMDb comments, I personally thought were pretty overly critical.
I hate that. I hate overly critical.
You can't please the internet.
No, I think it just seemed like a lot of people who, like, people were saying, oh, worst movie ever. I'm like, no. I would go so far as to call this good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
Rating time.
From 1 to 100, how many Peaceways do we give this movie?
I definitely enjoyed this film. Like I said, I felt that there was some stuff that was, you know, a little bit on the cookie cutter side. It was not perfect, but it's a movie that held my attention through the entire thing. And it's a movie that had fun characters. And especially these days, that is really difficult to come by, where you find yourself invested in what's going on with the characters. So I got to go 69 Patrick Swayzes on this one.
Nice, nice. Mike?
Well, I mean, everything Paul said is correct. It holds your attention. It's fun. It's honestly not that much you can poke holes at. Like, you can't just laugh at... You don't laugh at stuff ironically in this movie.
You laugh genuinely. Like,
yeah, it's a genuine... If there's a joke, you kind of go, ha-ha. And then it's not... Man, there's so much worse shit out there.
Sure.
I'm going 75 Peaceways.
What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I agree with what they've said. I mean, everything about this movie is genuine. And the choreography, the fight choreography was pretty good. The acting was good. It looked pretty good. I think I'll even go one better and give it a 78 Peaceway.
Dang.
Interesting. I totally agree with you guys. I picked the movie. I really like it. I really enjoyed the character relationships. So they are fun characters, and when they're together and just doing stuff, you're into it. And I actually would have said exactly what Chris did. I would go 78 Peaceways.
And that end fight scene, I would say, is rival to a lot of really good, you know, 80s fight scenes, post-apocalyptic fight scenes. It was long. It was It was involved,
tense.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was complicated.
It was satisfying.
Yeah, really satisfying. So that fight scene alone, definitely worth a lot of Peaceways right there.
Okay, guys, well, I'm glad you all enjoyed the movie. It makes me feel like it was a pretty solid first pick. Paul, where can people find us?
Oh, gosh, well, you can find us on Facebook, B-Movie Mania. Just do a search for that on Facebook, or you can find us on Twitter at B-Movie Mania, and you should follow us on both.
We really like it when people send us questions, thoughts, laugh at us, whatever you want to do.
We want you to be involved as humanly possible. So a lot of the movies that we're watching is stuff that you can find on Amazon, stuff that you can find on Netflix, YouTube, Hulu, stuff like that. We want you to be able to watch these movies along with us so that you can listen to the podcast and know what we're talking about. But I have to say, Jay, Steel Dawn, great pick for the first episode, but I want to warn our viewers, it's not always going to be this easy or fun. Some of this stuff is going to hurt.
Speaking of upcoming episodes, I wonder what's next.
on the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
Join us as me, Mike Hayes, brings you through the world of cartoon drawings and 3D animation in a movie called The Amazing Bulk.
No, please no.
Oh my God.
Hey, get ready. If you're going to watch this fucker, it's probably on YouTube. I have to double check, but I know it's on Amazon Prime. And drinking rule?
Drinking rules.
Okay. Drinking rule is anytime you just go, Jesus Christ.
Well, people are going to be in the hospital.
God damn it.
All right, we should probably wrap it up.
You wrap it up, Paul. Don't get a baby in someone.
Oh, my God. I'll double bag it.
I quit.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydy? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out, touch them. They are touching themselves, and they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!